Tere, and welcome to History of Estonia podcast. This is your host, William Parsley, recording from my home office in Cincinnati, Ohio, USA. I hope you enjoyed the intro music we have used for Professor Mart Kuldkep's discussions. It is from the Estonian band Trad Attack. The song is titled Sade, or Spark in English. In this episode, we will continue our discussions on the topic, How did Estonia become an independent state? Part 2. Professor Kuldkep is currently an associate professor of Scandinavian history and politics at University College London. He has a PhD in history from the University of Tartu, where he has also obtained his BA and MA degrees in Scandinavian languages and literature. His main research topics are Estonian and Scandinavian political and cultural context in the 20th century, questions of Estonians' Nordic identity, and Old Norse literature and culture. He is a member of the Estonian Student Society, Veljesto, and the Learned Estonian Society. How did Estonia's relationship with Russia affect its independence?
In a way, it was, of course, the most crucial relationship. There were three actors, I would say, on the local level that shaped how it came to be. One of them was the Russian state, the other one was the Baltic German community and their actual sort of imperial German friends, and then the Estonians themselves. But going back again to the pre-independence period, Estonia's relationship with Russia was an interesting one because there were some circles in the Estonian national movement that thought that maybe, you know, the Russian central administration was an ally of Estonians against the political, cultural, and economic dominance of the Baltic Germans in the region. Whereas there were others who thought that the Russian state was just as much of an enemy as the Baltic Germans were. And this early on created a kind of split in Estonian nationalism. So the sort of more radical ones who were against both, and the more moderate ones who thought they could compromise with at least one of them to benefit the Estonian national goals. But this then changed in a kind of radical way during the 1905 Russian Revolution, when it became quite clear that the Tsarist state was unable of reforming itself. There were some promises. There was a kind of constitutional promise of the establishment of a state Duma, a parliament for Russia, which the Tsar did. But the Tsar didn't abdicate. There was no reform that went far enough to make Russia democratic. And at the same time, the Russian state did not stand up to the Baltic Germans either. So when the revolutionary movement had, you know, started burning down manor houses, and there were also some assassinations of Baltic German barons, the Russian state backed them up and brought in the army to basically, you know, quell the insurgency and the ruthless and brutal way that they went about it together, the Baltic Germans and the Russian state. This left a kind of lasting memory in the Estonian collective psyche. So we had a Russia that was unable to democratize, unable to federalize as Estonians would have liked. And there was also a Russian state that was unable or unwilling to change this medieval system of governance that still existed in the Baltic provinces, with Baltic Germans having this preeminent position. I should say that the Baltic Germans were just maybe 2-4% of the total population. It was a tiny minority, but still a very privileged minority, unlike the indigenous peoples of Estonians and Latvians. So the political minimum to keep Estonians on the Russian side, so to say, would have been to do any of these things, you know, show willingness to actually go democratic, show willingness to stand up to the Baltic Germans, or at least defend the country against the German invasion, as it was threatening Estonia in 1917. And the Russian state was unable to do any of this, first because it didn't want to, and later because it couldn't, because the Russian state went through its own cataclysms in this period with the February Revolution, and then later the October Revolution. And the October Revolution, initially at least, seemed it would hold some promise. One of the first things that Lenin and Stalin did was to declare the right of self-determination of peoples up to the point of establishing their own states. And this, the Estonians were happy to take advantage of and say, well, we want to exercise the right of self-determination too, as did many other nationalities of the Russian Empire at the time. But quite soon it became apparent that this came with all kinds of caveats. So there was supposed to be self-determination, but not for everybody, only for the workers and the peasants, and the only kind of self-determination, even in their case, that was acceptable for the Soviets was through unification with the rest of the Soviet sphere, which then quite soon became the Soviet Union. So there was a kind of deep disappointment in Russia on part of the Estonians. And it's, in my opinion, not fair to say that they were sort of against the Russian state. They tried to stick with the Russian state as long as they could in some ways, because they too, they were realists. They too found it hard to imagine Estonia completely separate from Russia. This was very hard to imagine for foreigners at the time, impossible to imagine for Russians, and it was difficult to imagine even for Estonians. But Russia just left them no other chance. And later, when you know, after they had exercised the right of self-determination, and the Red Army invaded, of course they would fight back. There was no other way, because anything else would have been a kind of cancellation of what they had already done, of the path that they had already been on for a while by that point. So then there could be no compromise with the Soviets any longer. A compromise could have been there in 1917 and in the early 1918, and indeed when the Estonian political parties in the middle of January, according to new calendar 1918, decided to declare independence. They actually went to the Estonian Bolsheviks and asked, do you want to join us in declaring independence? Do you want to be on our side? And they said, no, actually not. They decided not to do it. And this was against Lenin's own advice. Lenin actually advised the Estonian politicians to go along with the Estonian Bolshevik politicians to go along with Estonian independence in early 1918, because Lenin was also a realist. He also realized that Germany was going to invade and there needed to be some kind of basis to protest against German occupation. But the Estonian Bolsheviks, they were more principled than that. They were more left-wing than Lenin himself. They decided you know, Estonian independence as such was reactionary. They didn't want to hear any of this. So they kind of put themselves in a position where they had been against independence from the beginning and put themselves on the wrong side of history in that sense as well, up to the point when they were liquidated in Stalinist purges in the second half of the 1930s. So Estonia's relationship with Russia is, as I said, it's a kind of interesting one. You can almost say that they tried to believe in Russia as long as they could, but Russia left them no other opportunity but to break with it. And this disappointment then meant that over time, this separation from Russia has only grown. Up to the point now, when obviously there is nothing to unite them anymore.
Interesting. What was the role of the Estonian people in achieving independence?
Yeah, it's probably fair to say that the role changed and grew over time. And as I said before, there was no Estonian independence movement as such, but there was a national movement. And by the point when Estonian independence was declared, it was clear that the national movement was a genuine popular movement. It wasn't just embraced by a small group of intellectuals or politicians or something like this. But independence indeed was not a popular movement at the time. So this was something that the Estonian elites still had to introduce to the Estonian people. And I think the experience of the War of Independence was the most crucial one to sort of consolidate it in the minds of Estonians. Because after you have fought for something and your relatives have died for something, it becomes quite difficult to then give it up as something that was maybe supposed to be temporary right from the outset. And so I would say it was during the War of Independence and in the aftermath of the War of Independence that independence as such becomes universally accepted by the Estonian people at large. And the fact that it did happen can, of course, be seen during the loss of Estonian independence in 1940 and onwards, and in the very widespread popular armed resistance movement during and after the Second World War, the Forest Brothers. These people had genuinely embraced Estonian independence at that point. And how exactly it happened, it was probably a gradual movement over time, but I would say that the War of Independence was probably the most crucial factor. Also, the fact that the Estonian state, as it came to be, it wasn't a failed state. This was what many had predicted as well. How are these people so immature and unused to governing themselves? How are they going to do it? Like, obviously, there are going to be civil wars, there are going to be all kinds of crises, they won't get along with each other, they will start repressing national minorities. None of this actually happened. So the Estonian state proved itself, it proved itself viable. And this is, I think, also important in the sense that it gave Estonians something to be proud of, and something later during the Soviet occupation that they could look back to. So it it ended up sort of carrying them through these decades and enabled them to, again, take advantage of a very special situation in 1991, where they got another chance to become independent again.
Great, thank you. How did Estonia's economy change after gaining its independence?
It's a good question in the sense that obviously this was one of the big challenges that Estonia had, since at the time of the beginning of the 20th century, the First World War, so on, Estonia's economy had been very tightly integrated to Russian economy. The Estonian industry, it was heavy industry exporting to Russia, getting its raw materials from Russia. They had the same Russian currency that the rest of Russia used. So in that sense, Estonia was different from Finland, for example, that had its own currency. And the agriculture, of course, was dominated by these big Baltic German landowners. So Estonians didn't have that much economic freedom before independence. And after independence, what they ended up with was a kind of economy that was not well suited to be managed on a national level, maybe necessarily, because of this dependence of Russia. So there were some quite painful economic reforms that Estonia had to do in the 1920s. They had to devalue their currency in the 1920s already, and then again had to adopt a whole new currency because of the Great Depression in the early 1930s. Changes also took place in agricultural production because of the land reform that was enacted starting in 1919. In a way, this made Estonian agriculture less efficient because these big landholdings centrally run, they were now broken up and parceled out to smallholders. But on the other hand, this still proved viable, at least in its time. And the farmsteads, if they were well run, they could become rather successful. And Estonia became one of the highly regarded producers of some agricultural products in the 1920s and 30s, like bacon and butter and so on, that they could export, for example, to the UK, amongst other places. So economic change was very Very difficult, just as it was also in the 1990s, when Estonia again faced a kind of similar situation of having to reform. In the end, we could say that both cases the transition was successful, even though, you know, in many ways, of course, the situation was also different now with the European Union and so on. Back then, there was no union that could help Estonia out. But still, it was to become very much an economically viable country, and its living standards were comparable to Finland by the 1930s.
What were some of the challenges that Estonia faced after becoming an independent state?
We have already mentioned several. So there was the economic challenge, of course. There was also a kind of political challenge that was more difficult to deal with because it had to do with people's prejudices. Most people found it very hard to believe that Estonia's independence could be sustainable. Sooner or later, people thought Russia would grow stronger again, it would come back again, it would take back the territories it had lost. Mm-hmm. And so there was a general skepticism in foreign policy circles and abroad more generally towards Estonian independence right from the outset. In the beginning, people thought that this was going to be just a kind of tactical thing, as Estonians themselves were thinking. Later, they thought this was going to be by necessity a temporary thing. And of course, in the end, we could say maybe they were right, because the Soviets did come back in 1939, 1940. And indeed, there was a second and then the third Soviet occupation. And this kind of backdrop of skepticism that enabled the Western allies to accept what happened in 1939, 1940. We could say this was there already in 1918, right from the beginning. It was a general sort of stereotype at the time that small states, they can't make it. They inevitably have to be swallowed up by empires, and the kind of situation created after the end of the First World War, when there was a proliferation of these small states in Central and Eastern Europe, that it was somehow an unnatural situation, and sooner or later this would be dealt with. Of course, as we now know, this wasn't permanent, and even during the Second World War and the Cold War, the kind of backsliding to empire building and authoritarianism, this wasn't permanent either. So we are now maybe back to something that more resembles the 1920s and 30s. Another thing that was a challenge, and this is related to the skepticism, was the general fragility of the international situation in the 1920s and 30s. Estonia managed to become a member of the League of Nations in 1921, and it was the only and a very ambitious collective security organization of the time. But already very early on, its security guarantees started to be undermined. And as time went on, the more toothless it became. And then it was proven quite conclusively in the 1930s, it's not actually able to do anything about aggressor states attacking their neighbors. And Estonians, they had relied on these security guarantees because these were the best guarantees they had. There was no NATO, there was nothing else that they could join. And the attempts to create some kind of defense union of smaller states in the region, it failed because it didn't have one great power who would guarantee its guarantees in the end, which seems to be, you know, important. Like the United States is the ultimate guarantee in NATO. They would have needed something similar in the Baltic Sea area. They approached Sweden, but Sweden didn't want it, and Soviet Russia and Germany couldn't come into question either. So the international situation being what it was a constant challenge together with the skepticism. And there was a sense of impending doom, even the minds of Estonians, at least from the beginning of the 1930s. Everybody feared that there would be another war. And the failure of the international community to prevent another war from breaking out is maybe one of the big failures of the whole international political system at the time. It had very little to do with Estonia specifically, but Estonia, of course, ended up suffering more than most as a result, becoming a part of this zone of bloodlands, as Timothy Snyder has called them, that were occupied both by the Nazis and the Soviets repeatedly.
How did Estonia's political landscape change after gaining independence?
The political landscape in Estonia changed a lot, and this was actually completely predictable, because the political landscape of an independent state must be, by necessity, be very different from the political landscape of a kind of autonomous province, or even a wannabe autonomous province, as Estonia had been before 1917. Estonian early politics had been characterized by two main currents. So there was socialism and there was liberalism. Estonian nationalism was sort of split into these two political currents, with liberalism being more widespread and having greater anchoring in the population at large, but socialism growing stronger over time, especially during the 1905 Russian Revolution, when the Estonian socialists for the first time sort of consolidated themselves into parties and started exercising a more permanent political pressure than they had been before. And this is predictable and reasonable, because both liberalism and socialism were directed against the socio-political order at the time. Both of them were directed against the Baltic Germans, were directed against the autocratic Russian central administration. And both of them basically fought to achieve change. Liberals fought for liberal policies, socialists fought for socialism, but both of them were actually forms of Estonian nationalism. Both of them also embraced the Estonian national goals, which were directed against Baltic Germans, were trying to achieve land reform. Autonomy was a question where socialists were split. So some socialists wanted Estonian autonomy, others didn't, but for the most part, they had similar goals. What was different was their radicalism. So the liberals were less radical than socialists. And the only conservatives, really, that existed in Estonia at the time, they were the Baltic Germans, because they were the ruling classes. They had something to be conservative about. They had property to hold on to. And when Estonia becomes independent, it starts developing a kind of right-wing politics on its own that it didn't really have before. So Estonian politics was all centrist and left-wing. But now Estonian elites themselves start acquiring property and start developing a kind of mindset that is necessary for conservative political ideas to take root. And in the 1920s, this is still not that noticeable, when Estonia is still very poor. But in the 1930s, there is a kind of conservative elite that has already emerged. Estonian politics in many ways is a big disappointment at the time, actually, because in the 1920s, there is a series of weak governments, unstable parliaments. People at the time, they blame it all on the Estonian constitution and it supposedly being too liberal. But this was probably something that more to do with a kind of reconfiguration in Estonian politics that had actually come about because of independence. So it was maybe unavoidable that there was instability, and the same instability was characteristic of other new states and even some old states in Europe at the time. So it wasn't a specifically Estonian phenomenon. And then in the 1930s, Estonia becomes an authoritarian state with the coup of Konstantin Päts in 1934. It is a relatively mild sort of authoritarianism, but definitely not a democratic system of governance. And in that sense, again, Estonia goes down the same path as all the other small states in Europe at the time. There are only two of them, Czechoslovakia and Finland, that managed to remain democratic up until the Second World War. But Estonia and most of the others did not. And then, of course, the question remains whether, you know, any of the fate that befell Estonia in 1939-1940 could have been avoided if Estonia had been a more democratic country. But to my mind, this is quite doubtful. So I would say Estonian internal politics, they weren't very successful, unfortunately, either in the 1920s or 1930s. Estonian foreign policy didn't achieve any great successes either, unfortunately, as the League of Nations system declined. So the failure to, you know, avoid the events that followed, it's to some extent also Estonia's responsibility alongside with everyone else.
Okay, thank you for that. Our last question: what lessons can be learned from Estonia's journey to independence?
I would like to go back to some of the first things that I said about there maybe being two narratives we can construct about it, one being the narrative of continuity, how everything in the end led to the Estonian independence, and then the other narrative of disruptions and unexpected things and opportunities being seized and so on, which is what I try to present when answering these other questions. I think it's the second narrative that's actually the more interesting one. And I think more generally, and also thinking about other independence movements and maybe thinking about history as a whole, we need to counteract what I would call the parochialism of the present. The idea that things have always been the way that they are, or at least were always poised to become the way that they are now. The kind of teleological narrative of one thing inevitably leading to another. I think it's fair to say that Estonian independence was not a given. There was almost nothing to predict it. There was nothing to predict it with certainty, at least, that it would survive. And it would have been a great sense of wonder and, you know, a cause of wonder and amazement for most people 100 years ago, if they had known that Estonia is independent today, still, even for Estonians who had already achieved independence by 1923. So I think we need to be cautious about being too sure about things. Estonian independence was not a given. It required a kind of unique configuration of factors, events, political forces coming together to become possible. But what I find even more important is the fact that even if these factors had, been there, and if these events had taken place, there was still nothing to guarantee that the Estonians would be there to seize the opportunity afforded by them. So it was really Estonian agency in these crucial crossroads in time that made the big difference. Taking advantage of what the situation afforded and establishing a new path to the future as they did. And what I find also important is that as Estonian independence wasn't a given, its loss wasn't also a given. We can again construct a narrative about how, you know, things weren't looking good already in 1918. And then by 1939, we could say, oh, maybe there was a fulfillment of the prophecy that it wouldn't last. But that wasn't a given either. And neither was its re-emergence a given in 1991. So the international situation can do only so much, but in the end, it has to be the people themselves who take ownership of their fate and who do things kind of steer their future in certain ways that they want. And I think Estonians managed to do it very successfully at least twice in their modern history, in 1918 and afterwards, and then again in 1991. There was another attempt in 1944 when they tried to use a similar opportunity, when the Nazi occupiers had already left and the Soviet occupiers hadn't yet arrived, they again tried to re-establish independence then. That, unfortunately, didn't work out. But this also shows that even if you have the best intentions and even if you exercise the agency, nothing is guaranteed. So there have to be two sides for independence to succeed. There has to be the international situation, and there has to be the local agency coming together. And then I think not just Estonians, but anyone like Estonians could have a chance.
Great. Thank you very much. It was an excellent conversation we had.
Thanks, William. I enjoyed it greatly, and I'm always happy to talk about these things.
Estonian history is fantastic, and I thank you for sharing your knowledge.
Thank you so much for doing this podcast, which I think is really important because, I mean, it's a very interesting history, but not a well-known history. And I think any kind of initiatives to educate people, they are much welcomed by Estonians and probably also by the people who learn from them.
Excellent. Thank you, and have a good day.
Thanks. Same to you.
Nagamist.
Nagamist.